Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, our programs, about social justice, or about the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Pat Lythe. Pat, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora.
Pat was born and raised in Hamilton, New Zealand. She's been heavily involved in Catholic activities since Vatican II. That means for about 50 years now. Since 1992, she's been employed by the Catholic Diocese of Auckland, where she is today the leader of the Pastoral and Parish Services Group. The pastoral office serves the three levels of pastoral councils in the diocese: the parish councils, the regional councils, and the diocesan council. Pat is also a member of the Auckland Diocesan Committee for Ecumenism and Interfaith Relationships, and she has been an active promoter of the Diocesan Bicultural Commitment. At our Mercy Spirituality Center, we have put the program for 2015 under the theme Roots. These two last months have been very significant for the roots of Christianity in New Zealand. In December 2014, the Christians in New Zealand celebrated the 200th anniversary of the first proclamation of the gospel on New Zealand ground, and it was done by the Anglican minister Samuel Marsden. In January 2015, a few days ago, it has been 177 years since the first Catholic Mass was celebrated on New Zealand ground. Two events that took place in Northland, about 5 hours north of Auckland, one in the Bay of Islands on New Zealand's east coast and the other one at Hokianga on New Zealand's west coast. Pat has been to both events. Pat, can you tell us a little bit more about the background of these events?
Well, the Christian Missionary Society sent missionaries out to Australia. And in Australia, there were lots of Maori people because Maori were trading with Australia. And Samuel Marsden met one of them, Ruatara. In fact, he met him in England, but he picked up his acquaintanceship with him in Australia. And Ruatara fell sick in Australia, and Marsden and his wife nursed him back to health. And so Ruatara asked him, he wasn't the only one who asked him, but asked him to come to New Zealand. And so they came to New Zealand and therefore and landed in the Bay of Islands.
That was in 1814.
Yes, it was in 1814, 20 years before the Catholics arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they came, so they came from Australia, via Australia also?
Yeah, they did, yes. And there were three of them who came together with their wives, some of them with their wives, some not, some sent for their wives later on.
So Ruatara also saw it as a thank you for Samuel Marsden for treating him so well.
Yes, and Ruatara negotiated the relationships with Maori and told the Maori people here how he had been treated by Samuel Marsden. And so he received a warm welcome.
He was the first interpreter for...
he was. And it'd be very interesting to know what he said, because Marsden preached on Christmas Day... 1814, about shepherds and snow and stables and sheep. And Maori people knew nothing about snow or shepherds or sheep. So it would be really interesting to know how Ruatara interpreted that sermon.
But Ruatara was in London, you said. So maybe, yes. Did he see snow in London?
I don't know. I don't know how long he had been in London.
Yeah, because he would have to explain that first. But at least
I'm not sure he even talked about what Marsden was talking about. He might have just been explaining that Marsden was coming out to bring... good news of a new kind of way of being. Yeah. He may not have even talked about the story. Who knows?
Yeah. And do the out of this experience, do the Anglicans also have this bicultural commitment that I was mentioning earlier that we have in the diocese, the Catholic diocese?
Well, they do. In fact, they have a better bicultural policy than we do now. But it didn't last. It wasn't as good at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And the event you went to, in it was in Oihi?
Yes.
Can you tell us more about this event?
Well, there were two commemorations, and one was on the Sunday before Christmas Day, and one was on Christmas Day. And because Christmas Day is such a significant feast day for many Christians, a lot of people couldn't go. So I went on the Sunday before, when the information centre at the top of the hill above the Marsden Cross, which is right down on the beach, was opened, and there were speeches, several speeches from Maori people, and reply speeches from government and the trust. And it was a fascinating day, because the Maori people were saying, in fact, that the relationships between Maori and Pākehā weren't as good as everybody has said, but the Pākehā responses ignored that.
Maybe they didn't understand everything. As I understand, it was all in Maori.
It was, yes.
They followed all the Maori protocol.
They did indeed. It was good. And Chris Finlayson actually acknowledged the fact that there were two versions of the relationship, yeah. And that is still being worked out now.
Yeah. So maybe he understood a little bit more of the speeches.
Yes, yeah.
And were there representatives from other Christian churches at Oihi?
There were. I mean, our whole commission went up. We thought it was important to go. But they weren't, most of the representatives of the other churches weren't acknowledged, because it was actually an Anglican event. Anglican Maori event, really. Mm-hmm. Yes,
and the inauguration of this park, the Arangahawa Park.
Yeah. And then after the speeches, everybody traipsed down to the beach. It was a long walk down in broiling heat, and an even longer walk back up. But the Marsden Cross is actually down on the beach.
And that's the beach, that's the bay where Marsden arrived.
That's right, and it's much easier to get there by water than it is by land.
Yeah. So Marsden Cross is at the place where Marsden gave his sermon.
Yeah. So that's interesting. And it's interesting that both of the venues where the Protestants arrived and the Catholics arrived are remote nowadays to modern New Zealanders. They're quite difficult to find, both of them.
Yeah, because they're both accessible from the water, not so much from the land.
That's right, yeah. And they're not in most GPSs, they're not even in them.
And, there's no village or no town.
That's right.
It's just, it's that park and the commemoration.
That's right. Yeah, there's a cross at Oihi and there's a plinth at Totara Point.
And I understand that there is a path with some explanation about the history.
Yes.
So people can go on their own pilgrimage to Oihi.
In fact, I was at Totara Point last Sunday, and Bishop Pat had come up early and had gone to Oihi to have a look himself, but he said he nearly got lost.
Yeah, at least during the celebrations, everything is well signed. And you see
there were plenty of people there when we got there. Well, he got there by himself, and there was, it's quite interesting.
It's different.
Yes.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercer Spirituality Centre in Epsom. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 a.m. on Planet FM 104.6. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Pat Lyth. Pat is the leader of the Auckland Diocesan Parish and Pastoral Group, and she has recently been back to the roots of Christianity in New Zealand. She went to Oihi, where the Anglicans celebrated 200 years of the arrival of the gospel, and she's been to Totara Point, where the first Catholic Mass was celebrated in New Zealand, and that was in 1838. So you went to Totara Point. Is that also like Oihi, a place where you don't see anything?
That's right. That's right. In fact, the point is you have to cross a farmer's land to get to it, so that, it's not accessible. There is a little AA sign which says Memorial Plinth, but many people miss it.
Oh.
It's on the road between Kohu Kohu and Mangamuka Bridge.
Yeah. So you really have to know where you go.
You do. And you have to open a gate to get onto the property as well if you're coming when it's not a special day.
Yes, I remember I went once and I thought that after the gate there could not be anything.
And you go quite along on a little rough road for a while till you get to the water.
Is there a memorial now in Totara Point where you can see?
There's a plinth on the hill, which has been there since the 50th anniversary. But just in the last 3 or 4 years, they've actually built a car park at the end of the road and a flat place where they now have mass with 4 memorial stones along a retaining wall. So it's much easier to actually to celebrate mass there and to have a sound system. Before, we used to sit on the grass on the hill.
And what kind of memorial stones are these? 4 stones, you said?
4 stones. Now, I knew you'd ask me that. One of them is commemorates the iwi, whose land it is. One of them commemorates Bishop Pompalia. One of them commemorates Neville Hogg, who was one of the instrumental people in the bringing back of Pompalia. And I can't remember what the 4th one is.
Was it something with Irish something?
Oh, the Poyntons. Thomas and Mary Poynton.
Who were the Poyntons?
The Poynton, Thomas Poynton was a timber merchant. His wife was Irish. I think he was Irish too, but I think he also might have been English-Irish, who had been working in the Hokianga for some years, shipping wood back and forth to Australia. And he was a Catholic. They were both Catholics, and they wanted their children baptised. And there were no Catholic priests. There was no Catholic church in New Zealand. They took their first child to Sydney to get baptised, a 6-week journey. A 3-week journey, 3 weeks there and 3 weeks back. And he asked Bishop Polding of Sydney if he could get a Catholic priest for New Zealand. So some years later, Pompalia arrived. Now, Pompalia was one of the missionaries that the new Marist Order in Lyon in France was training up to be a missionary. And this was a new order, and this was one of the first batch of missionaries. Pompalia was given the role of Vicar Apostolic of the whole of Oceania.
That's a similar role as bishop, but it's not a bishop.
That's right. So he was still a Marist. You can't be an order. You can't belong to an order when you're a bishop. You lose that denomination or that designation. So he wasn't a bishop, but he was made a bishop.
Later on.
Yeah. And the fact that he settled in New Zealand was pure fluke. He could have settled anywhere in Oceania.
Yeah.
And he went to various places, Futuna, Rotuma, various other places. But he needed to go to Sydney to pick up some supplies and things, and Polding told him about the Poyntons and how the Poyntons wanted somebody. So he came over here, and Thomas Poynton met him and said, "I'll build you a house wherever you want, and look after you." So that's how the mission started, the Catholic mission started in New Zealand.
And he built a house in Totara Point.
Yep. Poynton owned several houses. I think they were for his workers, and he improved whichever one Pompalia chose. Yeah.
And Bishop Pompalia was also the one who then later on asked the Sisters of Mercy to come to New Zealand.
What happened was he had 3 missionaries with him and more came, but there weren't enough and there wasn't any money because the locals didn't have any money. So Pompalia went back to Europe 5 times by ship, and that's
at least a six-month
journey to raise money and to bring more missionaries out. And one of the groups he brought out were the Sisters of Mercy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And can you tell us the story about Bishop Pompalia? Because his tomb is now in Motuti, not too far away from Totara Point.
Interesting, because Pompalia has a checkered reputation. He was regarded as a bad manager. Because there was no money, and he had to keep going back to get money, and I don't think he was a very good businessman, because all of the ships he bought tended to be not very good, and they had to be re-bottomed, and it took all the money. So he was regarded as not good with money, and the priests he sent around complained back to the Marist Order that they didn't have enough money to keep them, and so he got this reputation of being a bad manager. And so
But in fact, he was in a region where the people didn't have money. That's right.
And he ended up coming to Auckland, which all of the missionaries did because of the land wars up there. But the Irish settlers out here had no money either, the Catholic Irish. They were the bottom of the pile at the time. So he went back, and on the last time he went back, he got sick and resigned and died in France and sort of got forgotten. And it wasn't until Archbishop Liston decided to go and try and find his grave.
When was that?
In about 1960, 70, in the 60s or 70s. Mm-hmm. And he looked everywhere, couldn't find it, and finally found it in a suburban cemetery of Paris in Puteaux. And it wasn't marked as a bishop or anything exciting like that. You know, it was just
a priesthood.
Yeah. So as soon as Liston found it, the Maori people of the Taitokerau region started to agitate to get him brought back. And they, for years, because on the Diocesan Pastoral Council, the Taitokerau representatives would bring it up every year that I've been on it, from about 1980. Mm-hmm. They would bring up, they want Pompalia back, and everybody poo-pooed the idea. And they poo-pooed the idea. They said, why do the Maoris want him back? Because Maori protocol is that you go home to your place of birth to be buried. And they said, but nobody wanted him in France. Nobody mm-hmm. knew where he was. Nobody could have cared less about him. Mm-hmm. But we have great reverence for his memory, and we want him brought back. And so eventually, it took forever.
The church said
yes, and the country said yes. And, of course, it was a lot of negotiation, because to bring the remains, to disinter somebody in one country and to bring them back, there's a lot of red tape.
And more than 100 years later.
Yeah, that's right, more than 100 years later. So it was an amazing, amazing story. And a group of Maori people went to bring him back, and I was fortunate enough to be asked if I'd like to go, because they had 3 spare spaces. Mm-hmm. So it was an amazing journey to go. And most of the Maori people who went were elders who had ancestors who remembered Pompalia. And so for them it was like going to collect an ancestor. Yeah. So it was so moving, it was so significant.
That's what they say, what you said earlier, that the Maori said, but he didn't have anybody who cared for them in France, whereas he was in the Maori hearts.
That's right, and there were lots of children called Pompalia, and, and they had that Pompalia as their second name and all sorts of things. So when the morning we were to go to the cemetery to pick him up, so we had to be there at dawn, so we sort of got up at 4 a.m. and got on, it was middle of winter in mm-hmm. France, it was January, and arrived at the cemetery, and the karanga, rolled out over the quiet suburban Paris. And at the graveside were the mayor of Puteaux and the parish priest of Puteaux and two or three other people. It was just so...
But once they were informed that Bishop Pompalier, he was a bishop, he was not a nobody, that he was very much revered in a faraway country, mm-hmm. didn't they try to keep him at that point?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Weren't interested. Because his reputation of being a bad manager had sort of percolated back to France as well, so he was just considered
Because he always had to go to France to ask for money.
Yeah, didn't just go to France. He went all over Europe, went to Ireland and England and places. And they'd had to open the grave before we got there just to check it was him.
Yeah.
Which it was. I mean, he had insignia in the grave, which, proved it was him.
Yeah.
And so that day he was raised out of the grave, put into a temporary coffin, and taken to Notre Dame mm-hmm. Cathedral, where he lay in state in a side altar, in a side chapel there for the whole day, with Maori people sitting around it like at a tangi.
Yeah.
It was a tangi. They were doing the same kind of things that you would do at a tangi. People were coming all day. And then that night, there was a solemn high mass celebrated by the Cardinal of France.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just you know, it was packed. The church was packed. I don't know who was there. I don't know whether they were New Zealanders, expats, whether they were French people, but it was just packed. And at the end of the Mass, at the end of a solemn high Mass in Notre Dame, they always sing Salve Regina.
Mm-hmm.
But Cardinal Rasta J said, no, tonight we will sing Mo Maria.
Oh.
You know, the Pompalia,
yes.
The Pompalia composed version, song.
Yes.
It was just... and then he went out into the courtyard. The bells of Notre Dame tolled, and he was taken to the airport.
Yeah.
And we left on the same plane the next day.
And then he came to New Zealand.
And he came to New Zealand, and he was going to come to New Zealand, and he was just going to be taken north. And that was another discussion. Where was he going to be buried? And the priests of the diocese wanted him buried in the cathedral because, mm-hmm. the first bishop.
Yeah.
But the Maori people said, no, you didn't want him. We wanted him. We wanted him back. We want him buried up north. And so there was a big discussion of where would he be buried up north.
Yeah.
And it could have been, they said, well, why not Pompalia House, which is where the printing works were. But Pompalia never lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several spots on the Hokianga where it could have been buried. So finally, Totara Point was chosen. No, Motutee was chosen because there was a community there. Totara Point would have been the place, but there's no community around there.
No church or nothing.
And Purakau, which is where the Marist mission, big mission was, because they had a mill there and they grew there. They milled their bread and grew their grapes for their wine there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's deserted. It could have been there, but no, it ended up at Motutee because there was a community there who would look after them.
And they did. And they're doing.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So when you were up in Totara Point, you stopped in Motutee and visited the chapel. Yeah.
But when he came back, he was going to go from the airport straight north. And the people of the country, Maori people of the country, said, no, we want to see him. So, in fact, he flew from Auckland after a night at Otara, Faiora Marae. He flew to Dunedin and worked his way up the country with thousands coming out everywhere he went. It was amazing. It was amazing for the Maori people in particular who aren't churchgoers. But for them, it was something very significant. It was amazing, really.
And that was in 2002?
Yeah, it was 2002, January to Easter 2002.
He travelled all through the land.
Yeah, he did. He did, all over the place.
So he would have never expected that he would be brought back to Aotearoa and then travel through the country.
Yeah. Of course, he did travel through the country when he was here. He sailed around the country several times and set up mission spots all over the place. Yeah.
And usually at close to the beaches, close to the...
That's right, where the water was.
Yes.
So it was a fascinating pilgrimage. And the Maori people just, you know, for them it was all of their dreams come true.
Yes. I'm sure that Bishop Pompalier is the significant person for the roots of the Catholicism here in New Zealand.
Yeah. And one of his major endeavours, I suppose, or one of his major accomplishments was the fact that he was so respectful of Maori mm-hmm. and of Maori protocols and of Maori spirituality. And he was a great linguist, so he's learnt Maori and spoke Maori fluently. And I think that was another thing that endeared him to them.
Yes.
You know, and it didn't endear his Maori mission, Marist missionary colleagues, but it endeared the Maoris.
It definitely helps if you know the language and if you're interested in the culture and you're not coming just from a different country and not thinking about
that's right
where you landed.
So.
And he had some advantages because the French is also, you pronounce the vowels in a very clear way.
Yes.
And as he's a Marist, I'm sure that he would have talked about Marie, and Maria is peace. So
yes, that's right.
It all helps.
It does help. And, of course, the Protestant missionaries who had been here 20 years and were well established, and, in fact, there was a Methodist mission across on the other side of the Hokianga Harbour, didn't like him at all. One of the reasons they didn't like him, because he was French, and also they were suspicious of these papists as well. You know. So they didn't like him because they were Catholic, but they were English, and they didn't like the French. And, you know, so there were two reasons to be suspicious of.
So they brought the historic conflict between France and England to New Zealand.
Yeah. And most of he first came to the Maori, but eventually ended up being a settler church, and most of the Catholics who came were Irish. And the Irish-English thing, too.
So, and he brought the Irish Sisters of Mercy.
So that came as well. Most of the missionaries he bought after his third and fourth journey were Irish.
Yeah.
Which didn't help the English relationship, English-Irish relationship.
Yeah, when I've been told that when he came with the Sisters of Mercy, they spent 9 months on the boat, and he was teaching the sisters Maori. So when they arrived, they could speak to the people.
Yep. Yeah, he did that with all of us when he came back. That was one of the advantages of the long journey.
Yes. Yeah. He had no way to escape him.
No, that's right. That's right. But he took the time to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Pat. Thank you for this explanation and the historic background about Pontpallier and the Anglican missionaries on the east coast of New Zealand, northeast, and the Catholics, the Hokianga. And that's where their main parts are for the roots of Christianity in New Zealand. Thank you very much. That was really helpful to understand more about New Zealand history and Catholic history in New Zealand. For our listeners, our Mercy Spirituality Center is opening again on the 19th of January. And we are happy to welcome you at the Mercy Spirituality Center. And one of our regular meditation events that we have every Monday evening from 7:30 to 8:30 in our chapel will start again on the 2nd of February. Everybody's welcome. And if you first want to learn a little bit more about what is Christian meditation, please come to our courses on the 12th and the 19th of February in the evening, Introduction to Christian Meditation. Have a look at our website for more information on these events. And also, our big event coming up in February is on the 14th of February. It's Edwina Gately, who is coming from the United States, and she will talk about mothers, sisters, daughters standing on their shoulders. It's a retreat day from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the 14th of February. It's a Saturday. If you're interested in booking, please register at our office, 09638-6238. Or have a look at our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I hope that you tune in next week again on Friday, 8:40 a.m., Planet FM 104.6. And thank you very much, Pat, for coming here and for sharing some of your knowledge. I think that we could go on for a long time. And Bishop Pontpallier is such a fascinating person. Mm-hmm. And we have to thank him for coming and for bringing Sisters of Mercy here.
Indeed.
Thank you very much, and have a lovely Friday and a blessed week.